Hi, this is Maria Olson. You may know me from Trophy Heads or Starry Eyes and maybe Paranormal Activity 3. And I want to welcome you to Anthony T's Horror Show because it's an awesome show.
Hi, my name is Jessica Cameron and you're listening to Anthony T's Horror Show.
Hey, fellow horror fans. This is Troy Escamilla, the director of Party Night and Mrs. Claus. And you are listening to Anthony T's Horror Show. Enjoy.
Welcome to another edition of Anthony T's Horror Show. I'm Anthony T. In this edition, it's the second part of the best of 2019. I will be joined by Ashes Von Nightmare and Patsy the Angry Nerd from Throwdown Thursday podcast, as we're going to chat about the top 10 films of 2019 in our opinion. Now, you're wondering, when am I going to start doing news? Well, this panel round table really goes on for at least 80-85 minutes, pretty much. So we're pretty much not doing news this episode because, well, this episode's already long enough. Besides me adding commercials and whatnot, I literally do not want to extend this episode as it's long enough as it is. So you will not be hearing me talk about news items like, say, TerrorCon, which I really would love to talk about. You know, I'm not kind of not excited for it yet with its first three guest announcements. But that's my opinion. I'll talk about that more next episode. I will also talk more about Scott Dickerson leaving Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, because I really do have some thoughts on it, because really, I'm not liking what I'm seeing about this, because let's face it, it seems like Disney and Marvel want to take this film in a very different direction, and that means pretty much toning down the horror elements to the point where there might not be no horror elements, after all, in the Doctor Strange sequel, which may have caused Scott Dickerson to walk away from the project. But that's my opinion only. But it's something I'm going to talk about because, really, I was excited for this Doctor Strange film to be more like a horror film. And it doesn't look like it's going to happen. So I really need to talk about Marvel and, yes, you, Brad Fiegel, because I want my horror. Seriously. It's fun to have superhero films, but I want my horror. But I'm going to go more into this next episode as well, as I'll probably maybe spend a segment on that, because it is commentary worthy. Seriously. Because I think they're scared of trying to do something different with Doctor Strange. But I'll talk about that more next episode. As yes, I have the best of 2019 to go through. The top 10 films of 2019 to be exact. So I'll talk about that also more next episode. I will be back with Ashes Von Nightmare and Patsy the Angry Nerd from Throwdown Thursday podcast as we chat the top 10 films of 2019. Every day there's a family struggling with hospital bills to care for their sick child who is fighting an illness. There's a woman who is fighting breast cancer and is having trouble making ends meet while paying for their treatment. And there are burn victims that are going through treatments to heal their deep wounds. There is a charity in the horror community that helps these people. Scares That Care is an organization that helps families deal with the bills for their child. They help women get the treatment they need to fight breast cancer, and they help people who are dealing with severe burns get the help they need to heal. Scares That Care is a 100% volunteer organization and 501c3 nonprofit charity that is dedicated to helping these people in fighting real monsters. To find out more information or to donate to Scares That Care, you can go to www.scaresthatcare.org. Every donation helps Scares That Care fight real monsters. Besides Anthony T's horror show, you can also listen to these other fine podcasts on the Doc Discussions Network. Doc Discussions, hosted by Phil Perrone and Michael Darwin. You Know Nothing, Jon Snow, a Game of Thrones podcast. Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, a Westworld podcast. Halloween Boutique, Psychotronic Reviews. And Searching for American Gods. You can find Doc Discussions on the web at www.docdiscussions.com. And Doc Discussions is also available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Welcome back to Anthony T's Horror Show and part two of the best of 2019. This is the pod of the best of 2019, where yours truly comes on with a guest and we chat about the best films of 2019. I'm here with not one, but you guess this episode. I'm here with Ashes of Our Nightmare and Patsy the Angry Nerd from Throwdown Thursday, which is on the Dorkening Network. How are both of you doing today?
Really well. How are you?
Good.
Yeah, excited to be on here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us join you. We're super excited.
Now, before we get on to our list, what are some of your honorable mentions? Films that barely missed your top 10 list? I'll start with Ashes, then go Patsy, and me.
Okay, so I have two honorable mentions. First being Brightburn. I really liked the concept. The story itself, it wasn't solid. There were a lot of parts of the film that could have been better, but overall, I think the concept was great. And I think anytime you have a kid being creepy just adds to that creepy factor, just kind of elevates it even more. And I thought it was different. You know, it was kind of almost like a palate cleanser to all of these superhero films that we've been getting, to kind of get this like anti-hero film. So I enjoyed it. And my second honorable mention is actually The Lighthouse. Now, I didn't have the opportunity to see this in the theater. I actually just picked it up yesterday and watched it last night. And it is crazy. It is so cinematically beautifully done. There's just a lot to it. There's a lot to unpack. There's a lot that happens. And I feel like I need to watch it at least once more, if not twice, to really fully like digest the film and grasp exactly what was going on. But brilliant performances from Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson. And I was just like, holy crap, like Edward Cullen can act. Like, this is crazy. So those are my honorable mentions.
See, for me, I had to really pare down my list, because when I made my list of top 10 films of the decade, I actually had 63 in my top 10.
Yeah, Patsy doesn't know how to do a top 10.
I said, I'm just going to do one.
He doesn't quite grasp the concept.
I had 63 films. Yeah, so I just went with one honorable mention, and I chose this one because it has a lot of folks that we know and are friendly with, and I thought it was a really well done film, and I love the entire concept of this film. It's called She-Venge, so like revenge, but it's all women driven protagonists, and it features Sean Carmichael, Diana Porter, Izzy Lee, among many others. So I highly recommend it. It's on Amazon, and that's my honorable mention. Not because it's not as good as any of these other films, just I have to put somebody in the honorable mention category, and it just happened to be this one.
Now, usually when I do a list, there's always 3, 4, 5 films of fighting for, like, the last 3 spots. And my honorable mention is a film that, quite frankly, should have been on my top 10 list, because I thought the performances were very good in the film, but I just can't get myself to put the film in the top 10 due to the fact that this film, I think, was a little too long, and it felt like Avengers Endgame. I'm talking about It Chapter 2. This film, don't get me wrong, the acting is great, but around the 2-hour mark, I started to get a little bored, wanting things to speed up to the end. But this is still a really good film, but I really could not put myself to put this film in the top 10 because, quite frankly, there should have been at least 10-20 minutes edited from that film. I know it's a hard film to do, considering that Chapter 2 has a lot of material from the book. But I do have to give shout-outs to James McAvoy and Bill Hader. They were both great in It, Chapter 2. But it's the screenplay that really, I think, bogged the film down a little bit. And ultimately was the film that was left off my top 10 list.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I thought part one was definitely more solid. It was a stronger film than part two. But Bill Hader, oh man, as Richie Tozier, it was a great role. Great role for him.
I thought they all did a good job as the adults. But adult Richie was definitely one of my favorite characters of last year.
Yeah, that was definitely, I think, one of the best supporting performances overall last year as well, Bill Hader's performance. I really hope he gets more roles because of this film.
Yeah, I you know, we know he can be funny. He was on SNL. He has that show Barry. I haven't checked it out yet, but I'd like to. But, I mean, who knew he could really act? Like, who knew he could kind of reach down into somewhere inside of him and pull out a performance like that?
Yeah.
You know, I was very pleasantly surprised by that. Because obviously, you know, casting-wise, you're like, okay, this could work. Like, appearance-wise, you know, him and Finn Wolfhard, you know, you would believe that he was the grown-up version of Richie Tozier, and he did a very good job with it.
Yeah, that was great casting. I have to give credit to the person who cast that role, because that was just great casting.
I forget what we were doing, but we were driving around one night, and this was before, it may have been after seeing part one.
Yeah, I think it was on the way home from seeing part one.
Before they had announced, you know, I mean, obviously we knew part two was happening eventually, but this was before they had announced even mulling over certain actors for, you know, playing the grown-up roles. And I, you know, we were just kind of throwing out names, like, who would you like to see play these people? And I think we got
a lot of them.
A few of them, correct.
I had said Amy Adams instead of Jessica Chastain. I remember that.
But we mentioned James McAvoy. We mentioned Bill Hader. I think I said Jessica Chastain.
You might have, yeah.
But yeah, they did a great job. Great job casting that film. Pennywise was great in it as well. I feel like there was just something lacking in it. There was the first one was, in my opinion, scarier than the second one.
No, I think for all the meta jokes that they made, and Anthony, you might agree with me on this, for all the meta jokes they made about it, I don't think the ending was that good.
It was okay, but
I don't know. I'd rather have seen the Space Turtle.
Maybe you can petition Warner Brothers and their AI-driven.
Oh, that's not going to happen.
Oh, man.
Firm that they're using to create a Space Turtle movie.
That's the dumbest thing I've seen.
Yeah, it is. Really?
If you're going to make a Space Turtle movie now, I want it to be Gamera.
All right, let's get to the top 10 films of 2019. We'll start with Ashes.
Okay, so my number 10 is Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. I thought this film was great. I love how they're kind of doing this. intro to horror for younger crowds, and I wasn't a huge fan of the books when I was younger. I think because I wasn't really exposed to the books when I was younger, became more of a fan of them like as an adult, especially the artwork. So I appreciated how well the artwork translated from, you know, actual physical literature to the screen. They did a great job with the makeup and everything.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, because I mean, I was exposed to them at a young age. They were in my like all my classrooms, 4th grade, 5th grade, 6th grade. Like, they were just like, "Oh, you finished your work early, you know, we're encouraging you to read, so go read." So we did. And I do not have that in my top 10.
Really?
Not because I didn't think it was a good movie, but because what I wanted to do was, I'm a huge fan of independent filmmakers and independent films, and I watched way more movies than you did last year.
This is true.
I watched over 350 movies, so I have a lot more to choose from. But I wanted to show some love to some of our friends who do short films, because some of the short films I watched were much better than the big budget, huge production movies that we saw over the course of the year. So for me, my number 10, and again, this is in no specific order. Like, I don't think one film is better than another for any other reason. I think they were all excellent, but just because I have to have them in order. Number 10 is From Within, directed by Andrea Willanen. And not just because Ashes and I have brief cameos in that, but it's a really well-done film. Andrea is a very talented filmmaker. Definitely check out her stuff. I think my favorite thing that she's ever done is M for Mundane. But yeah, my number 10 is From Within, and I don't think it's out yet. I know it it made the festival rounds. I think it's still going around at certain places, but I highly recommend From Within.
I'll choose stay in the independent film world with my number 10, too, and it's a film called Braid. Now, this is a thriller which you have to see more than once to understand the film, because this is one of those films where you have to literally pay attention to detail in order to know what the hell is going on. The film has very good performances from its leads, which kept my interest in the film to the point where I wanted to see it again to see what was going on. I think I've seen this film like 3-4 times now. It is one of those films that David Lynch would be proud of. And I have probably another film or two that David Lynch might be proud of, because it's very weird. You don't have a clue what's going on, because you feel like you're watching a film where the pieces are scattered and you don't understand the ending at first, but once you see it again, you understand what's going on. It also does a really good job developing the twisted relationship between the three main characters, plus has very good cinematography as well. You can catch Braid on Amazon Prime.
Excellent.
Okay, so my number 9 spot actually goes to a film that is currently available on Hulu. It is called Little Monsters. It stars Lupita Nyong'o, and it is so much fun. It's in the same vein of like a Shaun of the Dead or like a Deathgasm.
Cooties.
You know, it's lighthearted. It's fun. There are zombies. There are kids. But typically when I watch a film that have kids in it, I'm kind of rooting for the kids to die, because typically, you know, the kids are annoying and you're just like, oh my God, I really wish all these little jerks would just go away. But in this one, you're actually rooting for them to all like stay together and pull through and survive, and, you know, well-placed humor mixed in with some interesting gore. I just think it's a lot of subtleties and nuances. It's great. I think it's just a lot of fun.
The casting was great. The casting of Josh Gad in that role that he
plays. Yes, yeah. He plays quite the jerk, and you are rooting for him to die, and he does. So in a very funny way. Like, when you think that this movie can't get any like funnier or kind of any more ridiculous, there's like a scene that happens where you're just like, oh my God, but it makes the movie, it makes the scene, you're like, this is actually
perfect.
But even
right before that, the thing that he does, how do you like it, like that's probably the funniest part of the movie.
Yeah, Yeah, so my number 9 spot goes to Little Monsters.
Now, before we get into more films, we may talk spoilers here, so just be on the lookout.
Okay, that's fair. So for me, my number 9, I'm going to stick with short films for the next few, but I'm going to go with a first-time filmmaker who did just like the most phenomenal job. This might have been my favorite movie of 2019. This is a film called Firstborn.
Oh my God.
Which is still, it's still making the festival rounds. I can't wait till it's, available to watch so I can share it and, you know, let everyone else in on this, you know, because I thought it was just one of the best things. It's a guy trying to sacrifice his son to, a demon in order to get, revenge on those who have wronged him. And it just goes sideways from there, and it's just amazing. Great performances all around. The writer director is Erica Stockwell. She did an amazing job. This was her first film.
I would say I was completely gobsmacked that this was her first film, because it was done in such a manner. It was well written, well casted. The characters, you know, I feel like the most difficult thing with short films is trying to establish characters and get you to care about these characters in a quick manner, you know, getting you to know what you need to know quickly. And she does that, and it's just, oh, the payoff is brilliant. It's so well done.
I just need to step in for a second. We have been together for 10 years, and this is the first time I've ever heard you use the word gobsmacked. Like, where did that come from?
I'm starting to read more, okay? Like, I'm trying to, you know, expand my vocabulary.
You learning that
and
on
stuff?
Your fancy British TV shows?
Yes, I've been watching The Crown, okay? And they say things like that.
I've been collie walloped. I don't know.
That's not a thing.
That could be.
It should be.
It's actually a type of
you heard
fish.
It here first, collie walloped.
It's a type of fish with, like, beet relish. I don't know. I have no
quite a delicious side dish.
Anthony, you take yours out.
He's going to regret having the both of us on at the same time.
This is the last time we're ever on the Anthony T's Horror Show.
My number 9 film is a film that I caught this year at Scares That Cares Weekend 6. It was a great convention, as it was like me and Philip went on a long road trip down there. Is definitely support this convention, but the film that I saw that really impressed me down there was a horror anthology film called The Theater of Terror. Now, this is an anthology film that consists of 4 short stories in a wraparound segment. I like the fact that each of the short stories in this film were very good. They could stand out on its own if it was just a short film. Director Tom Ryan does a very good job making sure each of the stories have an entertaining feel to them, whether it's The Gift, The Bookworm, Abducted, which has a very killer twist at the end, and Endangered. This is definitely a horror anthology film that you should check out. The film will be getting a nationwide DVD release next month on February 25th, but if you can go to theaterofterror.net, buy the film there, because you can get either the DVD or a Blu-ray there. Plus, you're supporting these indie filmmakers by buying the film on the official website.
So, my number 8 slot goes to an independent filmmaker. Independent films are really what's keeping the heart of horror alive. And I don't think they get as much accolades as they deserve. You know, people out there are saying that, you know, current horror, there aren't any new ideas. It's all boring. It's all reboots. And clearly they're not looking into the indie horror, you know, genre, because there's so many new and original and fresh ideas happening in indie horror that is just so satisfying and delicious. So my number 8 slot is The Box, by James Lamond from It Came From the 508 Productions. James is a friend of mine, but that's not why he's on my list. This film is just great. He has a way of writing characters that, you know, like I said earlier, get you to care about these characters in such a short amount of time. It's well-placed humor. It's great effects, you know, practical effects, which if you've listened to our show, you know how much we're huge fans of actual practical effects versus CGI and whatnot. And just great story writing. Nothing lags. Everything serves a purpose. And there are a couple of moments that just leave you going, what am I watching right now? But in a good way, like in a very good way. So number 8, The Box.
And this isn't the last time you're going to be hearing about that film. So I'm just saying that.
Yeah, that was a very good film. I've seen it already, picked it up at Rock and Shock. Thought it was a good film, better than One Last Kill, if I had to choose which one was better. I like the fact that he went for something different instead of trying to continue going the slasher route with his first film, which I think made The Box very interesting. And he has a very nice montage of someone training. It's a great montage. Before, and I'm going to say, spoiler alert, he dies.
Yeah, hammer time. And if I may plug a little something, you were on my show, Shark Bites, and you were actually one of the guests along with Bob Mendel, who was in that montage scene.
Yeah, that was a good scene, but it led to his demise.
Well, I think it was taking that trope of I'm prepared. Look at me, I'm doing all this stuff, and I'm gonna go win the day. And it's like, nope, no, you're not. Stop.
Sad face.
Hammer time. So my number 8 is, like I said, I'm doing a lot of short films to start off with. It's one that I just watched recently, and it's from Joe Lemieux and Michael Neal. It's called It's Me, Ma. That's It's Me, comma, Ma. And this one was really well done. I liked this one a lot. It's only about 4 minutes long, but it tells a complete, total narrative story. You understand where the characters are, and after actually talking with Michael recently, he told me about some of the challenges that they faced making this, even though it was so short. It's so good. It's still making the festival circuit, but it should be out, hopefully available on Vimeo soon. So that's my number 8.
My number 8 is The Ranger. Now, this was a very good film. I had a very fun time watching this film. It kind of reminded me of Psycho Cop and Psycho Cop Returns. You can get Psycho Cop Returns through Vinegar Syndrome. To see my point about that and compare that film to The Ranger. Even though they're like two different characters, one's just a total psycho and the other, at least with The Ranger, you get to see some sort of humanistic side of the character, which I liked a lot. The film has excellent performances by Chloe Levine and Jeremy Holm, whom I had the opportunity to meet over at ScareCon New England last year. Very nice guy. Probably was surprised when I brought the Blu-ray of the film for him to sign. The film also has very good direction from Jen Wexler. She directs the action very well, as it's intense right up to its gruesome finale. And remember, everyone, take nothing but pictures. I have to say that every time I see The Ranger now and mention it on this podcast.
Very nice. So my number 7 goes to a short film. It's one that Patrick actually recently just said. It's Firstborn by Erica Stockwell. So because he kind of talked on it, I'm not going to talk too much, but it was just great. It was amazing to see such content, such quality from a first-time director. And fun fact, we actually had the opportunity to chat with her a little bit after the film festival where we had seen these block of short films.
The Shauna Shea Film Festival.
And we were just kind of asking her, you know, how did you come up with this for your first film? Because, you know, typically there are a few duds before you get something great. You know, practice makes perfect and stuff. And she said she had actually written it as a story, as a short story. And the thing is, people don't read these days. So she had this story that she was looking to get out there. She, you know, wanted people to read it. She wanted people to see it. She wanted people to experience it. And people just weren't, because it was, you know, in written form. And people, I mean, like, I can't say anything because I can't remember the last book that I actually finished. I have a lot of books that I've started, but I have yet to finish one in probably years at this point. So, you know, goal for 2020. But anyways, you know, she decided that she would try to turn it into a short film. And boy, are we all great that she, you know, happy that she did, because it was great.
Yeah, I can't agree more with that statement. She did an exceptionally great job. And I actually did an article on her for my Women in Horror series. She did, made a huge impression. So for me, my number, what are we on, 7?
Yes.
Seven.
Yeah, I don't have these numbered. I just have dots next to them. And then when I check them off, I put a line. So that doesn't really help me much.
No.
So I'm on number 7. All right. So for my number 7, it's another short film called Matryoshka from Manny Serrano. And Manny is a veteran filmmaker, indie filmmaker. And I actually just checked out one of his other films, Theta State, on Tubi, the free movie app. But Matryoshka involves a group of friends at a Halloween party playing a game with one of those Russian nesting dolls. That's what they're called. It's Matryoshka dolls. I did not know that. I just always assumed they were called Russian nesting dolls, but that's because I do not speak Russian. So I learned something from this film. So it was educational as well as horrifying. This was it's just so well done for what the small space. And again, the creature design is something that I have talked about many, many times. The creature design was amazing. I think you can still watch the short. I think it's up right now. I shared it to a couple of different groups. I shared it on my own personal Facebook. But if you check out the Shark Bites page or the Throwdown Thursday page, I think, like, it was only going to be up for a few days. It might still be up. So if you can check it out, it's like under 10 minutes. It's so good. And yeah, so number 7 is Matryoshka.
My number 7 is Haunt. Now, this is a film directed by Scott Beck and Brian Woods, co-writers of A Quiet Place, and produced by Eli Roth. This is the first of two Halloween-themed films on my list. Now, this film surprised me in a lot of ways, because I literally thought this was going to be one of those films where it's just going to be a good film, that's it. But I liked the way they approached the screenplay in this film. They do a great job fleshing out the main character and giving her a backstory, which I like to see in the films. I just don't like to see films where it just rushes to a kill scene or just rushes from one place to another. Haunt doesn't do that. It takes its time. It sets up its scenes very well, including the ending of the film, which I really loved a lot, which I'll spoil a little bit. It contains release forms. And next scene, you get the revenge end of the film. At least you get a scene to set up the revenge scene, which you don't see in many films, because they will literally jump right to that scene to end the film. It is a very good film. Definitely check this film out on Shudder, and it's also out on DVD as well.
So my number 6 slot goes to another short film. It's called Heartbeat by first-time director Diana Porter. She wrote and directed this film. It invoked a response out of me that I wasn't expecting. It's a response that I've actually never had to a horror film. And I was truly terrified to the point where I was crying. Like, I didn't even realize I was crying while watching it until the credits started rolling. And I was like, holy crap, I'm crying right now. It's brilliant. So the premise is, and I believe it was supposed to be part of an anthology, where the premise is, imagine the state of affairs in Trump Pence's utopia, in, you know, Trump's America, and it tackles women's issues and something that, you know, at the time when she was initially writing this and you know, getting everything ready to film, it seemed really far-fetched. But now it doesn't seem so far-fetched after all. And I had the honor of speaking with her about this after the film, you know, just kind of casually chatting about it over drinks. And it came from such a great place. She, you know, wanted to tackle these issues that women face, and she did it in such a beautiful way and in such a touching way. And it's, you know, a conversation that I've had with some of my other female friends, like, oh my God, you know, kind of jokingly, like, oh my God, what if it comes to this, you know? But now it's just, it's kind of, you know, something that it could come to this, and this film just really touched on those human fears that we all have, and takes a situation that is so delicate to begin with and just creates chaos out of it. And it's brilliant. I believe it's not streaming anywhere right now because it is still making the festival circuit. But definitely, if you are, you know, experiencing a festival and you see Heartbeat by Diana Porter, you know, on the menu, definitely check it out because it is worth seeing.
So my number six is actually done by a frequent collaborator of Diana Porter, and it is again a short film. And Diana Porter, in the first time I saw her was in a film directed by this next director, Izzy Lee, called Innsmouth, and I thought that she did really well, and I thought Izzy was a great director at this point, and that's when I became a fan. But her film that we also saw at the Shaun O'Shea Film Festival, which is where I saw most of these films, Rehome, again, kind of takes the state of American affairs where there's a Mexican woman who is afraid for her child, and because she's going to be deported and she needs someone to take care of her child because she can't bring her child back into, you know, a dangerous situation. And there are these people who are like, oh, you know, we'll take care of your kid, don't you worry, and we'll help you. And then crazy stuff happens. I know we said we're going to do spoilers and stuff, but
no, you don't want to give the spoiler away for this. Yeah, like I didn't want to give the spoiler away for the last one because it's just,
yeah,
when that scene hits, you want to have that reaction.
There is a visceral reaction to what you see, and it's awesome. Like, Izzy does such a great job with so many like really touchy subjects, but she's able to like get the most. Like, I would love to see her direct a feature film because I would just be enthralled, I'm sure.
And I love when horror gets political, because what is more terrifying than politics?
In real life.
Seriously.
Yeah, the only film I saw from Izzy Lee was Innsmouth, and that was a really good film. I'm surprised she does not do any feature films.
She does a lot of shorts. Like, she puts out a lot. Like, she did The Obliteration of Chickens. Like, that one was really good.
That one was just, it was hilarious. But
very bizarre, very Werner Herzog-ish.
Yes, but yeah, she definitely has the chops to, if she wanted to, she could do a feature length. And I would be first in line to see it.
She's multi-threat, too. She can write, she can produce, she can act, she can direct. Like, give her any job, and she's just, she'll nail it. So, and, you know, it's no surprise that someone she worked with so frequently, Diana Porter, was able to nail her first directorial debut, because when you're able to work so closely with someone all the time, you're bound to pick some stuff up. And Diana, while this was her first, Heartbeat was her directorial debut, she's a veteran of the industry. So.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my number six film is produced by the most talked about topic on my podcast. And if you listen to the podcast, you know what's coming. It's a film produced by none other than Jason Blum and his Blumhouse crew. Well, he didn't win the award for dumbest idea this year for Black Christmas.
As you were saying that, I wrote it down on a piece of paper. I just wrote Blumhouse, and I passed it over to her. And as soon as I did, you said it, because I knew exactly what you were talking about.
You will not see Black Christmas on this list, or probably anybody's list.
I was just going to say, I don't think it's going to be on any list at all.
You made the same point I said. We saw the trailer. I'm like, all right, well, I've seen the movie, because clearly this was like, they've just given everything in the plot away. Like, that's obviously what happened.
And the film's twists, and to make matters worse, made it PG-13. And it didn't work out so well, which was very predictable.
Yeah, I don't think horror should be PG-13.
No, it shouldn't.
I really don't. Like, I can't.
Well, certain stuff can get away. The Monster Squad, Gremlins.
Well, so there are certain
scary
things.
Scary stories.
You have to do it right. But
something like Black Christmas remake.
Don't remake an R-rated slasher into a PG-13.
Right.
Like, I don't want to see a PG-13 Texas Chainsaw.
Or a PG-13 Halloween.
Right. Yeah. See, you get it.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be a bad time.
Actually done by Jordan Peele, so it's probably going to get on a lot of people's lists.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's Us.
Wait, Us? Like me and Ash?
Not that us.
Jordan Peele's Us.
Wait, who's on first?
Now, I really loved his direction, this film. It really does a really good job focusing on the main characters and the main doppelgangers, as it really was intense. I like how this film had a very good backstory that pays off at the end. It also has great performances. Plus the fact that I like the way the doppelgangers looked with the red jumpsuits and everything to give it an identity instead of just having them in regular street clothes. That would have been a little too much and maybe a little too confusing. I really think Jordan Peele is becoming a master of horror, and he really does a great job in bringing a sense of dread and suspense to this film, which made this film very good and one of my best films of the year.
I totally get that.
Yeah, I agree with you, because Us is my number 5 on my list. And for those reasons, exactly what you just said. It was highly anticipated, especially after seeing Get Out. You know, Get Out was, you know, oh, Jordan Peele's doing a horror film. Isn't he supposed to be a funny guy? Well, I guess, you know, and holy crap, can funny guys do horror? Like, seriously, they just tap into this place. And I think, like you said, Jordan Peele, I'm hoping that we see more horror from him, because this seems to be his wheelhouse. You know, yeah, he can do comedy and that's great, but horror, like, definitely comes from a place of passion with him. And Us was great. Like you said, cast was brilliant. Writing was great. That twist, oh my goodness, that twist. And the part that made me laugh the most was the whole Hands Across America thing, because I remember actually owning a Hands Across America pin back in the 80s.
Hands Across America!
So I love that he kind of took this, you know, not bizarre piece of American history, but, you know, just this thing that's kind of faded into the pop culture zeitgeist of you know, pop culture history, you know, in America. And he just kind of pulled it, brought it back to life. He's like, hey, you know what would be great? Hands Across America, and just turn it into this thing. And I don't know what came first. You know, the idea, or the, hey, let me see if I can make a horror film about this, you know, thing that was done in America in the 80s to what was it supposed to be, like, help end world hunger or something like that?
Bring awareness.
Some quasi-charitable thing that was supposed to be happening in the 80s, you know, that didn't involve, like, Cyndi Lauper and Michael Jackson and a bunch of other people singing a song. But yeah, so my number 5 is Us, and I can't wait to see what Jordan Peele does next.
My number 5, I'm actually moving away from shorts, but I'm sticking with indie films. And Anthony, this is one that you and I discussed a little bit off air before the show, and that is The Headhunter. This film has a total cast and crew comprised of 5 people.
That's it?
That's it. The whole cast and crew is 5 people. And while it takes place really in, like, one small place, it's usually in or around the main character's house. It is still, it feels like it is an epic, like, Lord of the Rings-esque masterpiece where, like, there's this huge sprawling countryside, but with only a few people. And there are some fantastical elements to it, which I really dug, and that kind of drives the plot along. But it gets dark really quickly, and then it gets really dark in the final act of the film. So I 1,000,000% recommend The Headhunter.
And that's on Shudder, right?
I don't know if it's on Shudder. It might be, but I bought it.
Oh.
I bought it, and because I was dying.
Apparently, I own it.
Yes. Well, I own it.
Oh, excuse me.
You own half of it. You own the work of two and a half of those people.
I own the first part. I don't get to see how it ends.
No.
My number 5 film is Satanic Panic. Now, this is a crazy film, and I'll give you a little teaser. The first of 2 films dealing with rich Satanists. Now, this film has some very crazy death scenes, including one that I cannot talk on air because it's just so crazy. It might be a little too risque to talk about. But the screenplay does a very good job balancing the comedic and horror aspects. The film's director, Chelsea Stardust, does a very good job making sure everything is directed well enough from the action to the dialogue scenes to make this a very fun film. There's a lot of good chemistry with the cast in this film. This film has some very good performances from Rebecca Romijn, Haley Griffin, and Rudy Modine, who you might know from the Happy Death Day films. Definitely check out Satanic Panic. It is a fun film from Fangoria, and I really can't wait to see what Fangoria brings out next.
See, that's one that I haven't seen it yet, but I really want to see, and listening to you just describe it, like, now I really want to see it, so I'm going to have to get my hands on that.
Yeah, like I said, I cannot discuss one of the death scenes because it's a little too risque.
Oh, see, that sounds right up my alley. I love risque death scenes.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy!
So my number 4 film actually contains no risque death scenes, unfortunately, but it's a really great film. It was highly anticipated on my end. Great cast. It's again in the vein of kind of like a Shaun of the Dead horror comedy, and I just love it. It's The Dead Don't Die. You get great humor, fun writing, you know, witticisms and sarcasms and what have you. And there's some decent gore in there, too. You know, I love Adam Driver. I think, you know, I find myself really liking everything that he's in that I've seen. You know, I was a fan of him in Girls, and I've seen, obviously, the Star Wars films, and I've seen him in most recently Marriage Story on Netflix and The Report on Amazon. I've seen him in a couple of other things, too. He's a great actor, and him and Bill Murray play off of each other so well, along with Chloe Sevigny. She's a great actress, too. It's a very specific type of humor, and if you're into that, you're going to love it. And I am into it, so I loved it. And having Carol Kane and Iggy Pop as zombies was just kind of like the icing on my horror cupcake, because
even mention Tilda Swinton.
Oh my god, that's right, Tilda. So how did I forget Tilda Swinton is in it? And that part of the film is just completely bonkers.
She's amazing. I mean, she's amazing, but she's amazing in this.
I mean, of course she's amazing in this. She's Tilda Swinton, but yes. So number 4 for me is The Dead Don't Die.
Number 4 for me, we already talked about, and we talked about it at length, and everyone kind of raved about it. It came from the 508 Productions, The Box. We got to see this.
What's in the box?
Yeah, and funny story. I was kind of waiting around to talk about this, but my highest rated episode of Shark Bites, my most listened episode, is called What's in the Box, and it's my interview with James LeMond.
Oh, hooray.
So, yeah, I recommend, you've already heard the reasons why, so I'm not going to belabor it, but very well done from everybody involved. You know, Dan and Erica and Brianna, like, you know, obviously Bob, we talked about, everybody did a great job in this film. So, check it out. And, yeah, Anthony, on to you.
My number four film is Candy Corn.
Ooh.
Now, this is a film, when you look at it on paper, looks like the typical horror convention film. It has Pancho Mola from 31, Tony Todd, whom everybody knows, PJ Souls from Halloween, and Courtney Gaines from Children of the Corn. But what really makes this film very good was the fact that this film has, first of all, two great performances. First from Pancho Mola as the ringleader of the carnival. I really wish he got more work, seriously.
Agreed.
Between that and his supporting performance in Three from Hell, he's done a very good job this year in the way of acting. I would love to see him in more roles. And the other person, and this probably will surprise you, is Courtney Gaines. Well, he produced the film as well, but he really does a good job playing the sheriff in the film. He really brings a level of dread to the character. Every time he goes and investigates one of these homicides, you can see this guy really so horrified and everything with what's going on. The film has really great cinematography, as it has the 70s Halloween-like look to it, which really helps with the film's identity. It has some very good kill scenes as well. It's intense, it's shocking, and it's very violent. The film was directed by Josh Hasty, who did the 31 documentary, In Hell Everyone Loves Popcorn, I believe the title was. Definitely check out Candy Corn. It's a very good film. I think it's a very underrated film this year, in my opinion.
Absolutely agree. It's definitely worth a watch, and it was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun watching it.
Yeah, I dug it a lot, and one of the things I said in the review I wrote for it was I think that Pancho Mola could pull off being a leading man. I think he could
absolutely
carry the film as the main character. I would love to see that.
I was gonna say he definitely deserves that chance, 100%.
Oh yeah, he's so good at what he does. Like, he's just an absolute pro, and you know, having met him at Rockin' Chalk a couple years ago at the 31 panel. 31.
Yes. He was there.
He was just a classy guy. Like, yeah. So I
do agree 100%. He's a very cool person to meet if you get to see him at any conventions.
Yeah, he's definitely worth throwing your dollars at and meeting, because he'll definitely make the meeting memorable. So my number three film is a very controversial film, especially on these social medias. I'm sure you've seen many a fights happening in the comments section regarding this film. I'm talking about Midsommar. I loved Midsommar. It was one of those films that the cinematography is gorgeous. It's very well directed. I thought the actors did a great job, you know, encapsulating who their characters were and what they were supposed to be. Florence Pugh. I always say her last name wrong. Is just absolutely wonderful, and she's having quite the year as far as films coming out. You know, films have come out and films coming out this year as well. She's definitely on my radar as someone to watch. But oh man, it was quite the mind bender watching this film. And I sat there in the theater after, and I didn't know if I had liked it. Patrick's like, oh, I didn't like it. I was like, I don't know what I think about this.
Wait. To be fair, I've said that it is a good film. It's well shot, well acted. It wasn't for
okay,
me.
Well, I'm talking about my version of the story, and in my version, you went,
Inaccurate.
Pretty accurate. But I had to digest it. I had to sit with it for a bit and think about it. And the more I thought about it, the more I focused in on some of the little details and the, you know, character development, especially with her character and everything that was taking place, the more I liked it. And the more I sat with it, I started to love it. And I found myself defending it on social media when other people would be like, well, I didn't like it because of this, this, this. And it's like, well, is it because you didn't think of it this way? Because if you think of it, you know, this way, then you might appreciate it more. You know, I feel like it's a film that's kind of open to interpretation. But the way I interpreted it made me love the film even more, to the point where I think it's a beautiful film. It's a great story. You know, her overcoming her grief of everything that happened and, you know, to her just being happy at the end, you know, and of course she's what, the May Queen or whatever they're calling it. So, yes. You know, she's decorated and all the flowers and the colors, and it's just, I think it's just perfection from beginning to end. So my number three is Midsommar.
My number three is one that I think you might have higher on your list, and I think based on some hints Anthony might have on his list as well, so I'm not going to dwell too much on it. But Ready or Not, when I saw the trailer for this, I was like, oh man, this thing looks amazing. And then when we finally saw it, I was like, yep, this is awesome. We actually saw that back-to-back with the Mr. Rogers movie, so it was a little weird, a weird juxtaposition for seeing the films. Is that what we saw?
No, we saw Knives Out with that, sweetie.
Yes, I'm sorry. What did we see with Ready or Not?
Something that wasn't good. Was that Ready or Not and the 47 meters down?
It might have been. It might have been 47
but
meters.
I'm having a difficult time remembering because I feel like that's a film that I don't want to remember.
I think you're right. I keep conflating Knives Out and Ready or Not, probably because like they were both super entertaining and they were both like really well done with strong female lead. But yeah, I loved Ready or Not. I like movies that keep you guessing and you're not entirely sure what's going on until the end, and that's what this movie is. And I just thought, what is that young lady's name?
Samara Weaving.
I wasn't even going to be close if I guessed on it, but yeah, she was really, really good, and she was one of my top characters of the year. So yeah, number three is Ready or Not.
I'll talk more about that film later. A little tease. But my number three film was actually the last film that I saw in 2019. How about that? It's an indie film that played on the film festival circuit and is now available on Amazon Prime. It's Teresa and Allison. Now, this is one of the best vampire films that I've seen in years, which is probably an understatement because there haven't been too many vampire films, which is sad, seriously. While Hollywood is pretty much chosen to literally focus on supernatural films and slashers, I think they've gotten away from the basics of horror with the werewolves, the vampires, and all that other good stuff. But this film, Teresa and Allison, was a hit on the film festival circuit. It's very gothic, it's very erotic, and it's very bloody. All requisites for a great vampire film. The direction is handled very well here, as director Jeremiah Kipp does a great job making sure all these gothic, erotic aspects work so well on screen, and make sure that his cast is on page. The screenplay is also a very good one by Charles B. Lincoln. It's also a very inventive one, as it does a great job blending the vampire tropes along with other dark fantasy and erotic elements, which really makes this a great watch. It sounds like he's trying to create a universe or something off of these films, because that's what I got after seeing Teresa and Allison. It tells me we're probably going to see more films written by Charles B. Lincoln in that same universe. And the film also has some great performances from its leads, Ariel Hope and Sarah Scoffs. Excuse me. As sometimes that is a hard name to pronounce. But oh, definitely yeah. Check that film out. It's on Amazon Prime right now. And quite frankly, I'm surprised it's on Amazon Prime, given the content of this film.
I'm going to have to check that out. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, and I'm
I love a good vampire flick.
I'm a fan of Jeremiah Kipp myself.
So my number two film, I'm not going to speak much on, because I know Patchy has it on his list.
Patchy?
It's a Patsy. I was just doing it in a voice. I was going to call you Patrick, and then Patsy, and it came out Patchy.
Patchy. Patchy. Angry the Patchy Nerd.
Patchy, the pirate from SpongeBob. Nerd. Hey. My number two film is Crawl. That is a monster movie done right. It gives you a strong female lead, actual peril. The CGI was decent. It was good. It wasn't horrible. You know, unlike some of these other creature films that obviously you don't want to use real animals because, you know, that's not the best thing to do. So you use CGI.
I was so angry when they tortured those poor dinosaurs in the Jurassic Park franchise.
I know. Well, see, that's why I'm
so... They are not there to perform for your amusement.
So that's why I'm so glad they stuck with the CGI crocodiles for this film. Of alligators.
Thank you.
Sorry, it's...
Florida gators. She literally
the
was...
The really big lizards that were in the film.
Komodo dragons?
Yes. But it created actual...
Was she a Targaryen?
Realistic... Shut up, I'm talking. Actual realistic peril. You know, it's a situation that not
every... Man versus nature film.
Yes, like a situation that obviously not everyone would find them in, but it is plausible. It's something that could actually happen. And the suspense that was created, you know, I love it when our final girls are really beat up and mangled at the end. You know, I love it when final girls really just fight their way through and make it out, you know, unlike some of the final girls of, you know, sometimes the 80s and 90s where they're pretty much pristine walking out, you know, with maybe like a couple of cuts and a little bruise, like, ouch, you know,
broken
like I,
nail.
Yeah, I love it when my final girl is just battered and bruised and bloody and just really looks like she is the final girl. And I just loved everything this film brought to the table, so I'm going to go with Crawl.
My number two is one that was already listed, so I'm not going to talk about it too much, but The Dead Don't Die. I really loved it. One of my favorite touches in the entire film is when Adam Driver offers his car to Tilda Swinton, and he's like, oh, here's my keys, and he has a Death Star, a Star Destroyer keychain. And he's like, oh, I love Star Wars, you know, and he's like talking about how much he loves it. And she's like making fun of him for being a nerd and stuff. Oh, it's so, so meta humor, like, and meta humor done right. Yeah, I liked everything about this movie. Him and Bill Murray together. Larry Fessenden as well. Larry was great in this. I dig this film. And that's why it's my number two.
My number two is my controversial filmmaker Gaspar Noé.
Uh-oh.
And it's his most commercial film, which is pretty much an understatement, considering his filmography has a lot of films that are so controversial. I'm talking about Climax. This film is a psychological horror film that was an acid trip from start to finish. It focuses on a dance troupe who are rehearsing. Then after rehearsals, they throw a party. Someone spikes the alcohol, and it takes a turn for the worst. It really is one of those films where the ending gets so chaotic. And the structure of this film is so chaotic as well. It starts with the end credits. Probably the only film in 2019 to start its film with the end credits. Then, 45 minutes into the film, you get the title cards for all the people who have worked on the film. And then, just at the end of the film, you get the title card, Climax, film over. But this film I can appreciate a lot because, first of all, I like the way how Gaspar Noé uses dance in making something that is so simple so horrifying. This film has some very horrifying visuals, especially in the last third of the film. I like the way Noé approaches the scenes, as it has a chaotic feel to them. And his screenplay is also very good. It establishes the characters before the madness ensues. And I also liked the introduction to this film. It had this retro feel where you were watching these character introductions through a standard television. Not an HD television, a standard television. The 4x3 television.
Oh my goodness.
And that was pretty much just introing the characters. But this is a crazy, horrifying film. It is one of the shocking most shocking films that I've seen all year. And that last 10-15 minutes really paints an image like you're in hell. Because this is really horrifying to look, as everybody's so tripped up on LSD. It's what makes this film very great, and it's probably the best psychological horror film I've seen all year. Definitely check out Gaspar Noé's Climax. It is definitely his best film to date, and his most commercial film, because it did end up in theaters, and not like two or three screens. Well, like 200 screens, but 200 screens is better than two or three screens in VOD. So that's why Climax is my number two.
Yeah, especially when you consider his films like Irreversible. Yeah.
Enter the Void.
Yeah, yeah. Gaspar Noé is a very, like, you know, you want to talk controversial. Yeah, he's one of those guys.
I've actually never seen any of his stuff, so now my interest is piqued. I need to watch something.
But I know a lot about Irreversible, and it's, ugh, yeah.
So, my number one film, horror film of 2019, and it's actually up there with my top, I want to say it's probably my top three films of the year, it's Ready or Not. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. This film was everything that I wanted it to be. You know, we had this great final girl. We had a just crazy cast of characters. The horror in it was, yeah, I was going to say relatable, but not really relatable. I mean, it's kind of how I wanted my wedding night to end, but that didn't happen.
No, that was supposed to be Rec 3.
The zombie apocalypse outbreak happens at our wedding.
We literally used the picture of the girl from that movie holding the chainsaw and the wedding dress on our wedding invitations.
Yes. Yes, we did. But anyways, I thought this film was just, it was just so enjoyable from start to finish.
Original too.
Yeah. It obviously hasn't been done before, and everything that happened served a purpose. Everything you learned about had a purpose in the film. It wasn't just kind of muddling you with you know, all of this, you know, things that you're not going to need this later. We're just trying to, you know, pad the runtime. So here you go. It's just, it was so much fun. The gore was great. Oh my goodness. And the tension, especially there's that scene with her crawling out of she's in the barn, she's trying to crawl out of the situation that she's in, and, you know, even upon rewatch, you know, I'm on the edge of my seat, like I feel like I'm going to crawl out of my own skin as she's, you know, trying to reach her hand up on that specific part and getting things just right, and oh my God, it's just so well done. I loved it. And again, the well-placed humor, my favorite character of that film, or I should say one of them, because obviously I love Grace. I think, you know, she's everything I want my final girl to be. But the coked out sister, the crazy sister who accidentally shoots people she's not supposed to shoot. Oh my God, she was great. She was, I loved her. And, you know, the aunt who was very into everything and into, you know, the family's honor and this is what we do, and calling her the brown haired niece. I just, a great cast of characters really made this film And, you know, there really isn't a twist. Everything's kind of laid out for you. However, you don't know what's going to happen next. You don't know which way the film is going to go. And boy, is that ending so satisfying. So satisfying.
Totally agree.
Yes.
You know, when she's on those steps and she lights up that cigarette. Oh, love it.
My number one is one that you mentioned earlier, and you were very correct in your assessment on this. Crawl, the job that Sean and Michael Rasmussen did writing this, the job that Alexandra Aja, I never know how to pronounce his name, and I've always heard it pronounced differently. So if you're listening, Alexandra, I'm sorry, but the two lead actors, Barry Pepper and Kea Scodelario, just knocked it out of the park. One of my favorite things, and I bring this up every time I talk about this particular film, 99% of the time when you have a man versus nature film, there's, especially if it's like a bunch of animals, there's always some way of identifying like the main antagonist. Like in The Gray, you have like that one all black wolf that keeps going back and forth, and like that's the one that Liam Neeson marks as his enemy, and that's the one that marks him. You know, and you always have like that one thing. Or if you have a bunch of very similar looking creatures, like in this case, alligators, they usually have some sort of distinguishing mark. And one of the scenes we see Kea Scodelario's character, Haley, jab a screwdriver into the eye of one of these alligators and like kind of scar him up. And typically the trope is, okay, she's going to face off against this one at the end of the film. But you never see it again, which I thought was brilliant because it takes that trope and kind of turns it on its head. You know, there's a term that has been thrown around a lot in the last couple of years, subversion of expectations. Well, this subverts your expectations in a good way. Like people like to use that term just to kind of like, oh, there's a surprise. I subverted your expectations. And it's like, yeah, I expected your movie not to suck, but it did. So, oh, you subverted my expectations. But this is a true, like, example of that particular saying, because in so many of these man versus nature films, like, that's what you see, whether it's a bear or a shark or a lion, or there's always some sort of distinguishing feature. Maybe the lion has, like, you know, a scar, or, you know, there's a, you know, a mark on its fur, or like a white patch or something. They don't do that with this. And it's just, even the ending is a bit ambiguous, which I thought was excellent. So number one, Crawl. Crawl for me was one of the best films of 2019. Haley made my top characters. The Rasmussens were some of the best writers, I thought, all year. Like, this is one of the best screenplays, one of the best stories told on the screen. Alexander, he made my top director's list. Like, this made my top horror of the year, my top movies of the year, my top movies of the decade. Like, Crawl to me, if you can't see this, if you haven't seen this film, make sure you do. It's awesome. And I'm not sure when this is airing, but I already talked about this on my show, but on January 13th at the Brattle Theater, the Rasmussens are going to be doing a live Q&A after a screening of Crawl. So if you can make it there, get there and check that out.
Now, my number one film is also Ash's number one film, Ready or Not.
My man!
Now, this was one of those films after I walked out the theater where I thought to myself, I want the Blu-ray immediately. I don't want to wait 4 or 5 months for it. It was like one of two films this year where I wanted the Blu-ray immediately after the film. This film has great characters. I like the coked-out sister, the aunt, and especially the butler who's obsessed with classical music.
Yes.
Oh, he makes the film.
Yes, he does.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
It's like this film had every right to probably be middle of the road, but it doesn't because the characters are different from one another, which really made me like this film a lot. Samara Weaving is very good, whether it's in this film or The Babysitter or Mayhem. She's great. I don't know why she hasn't gotten major film roles. I know she's going to be in the new Bill and Ted film.
Yes, she is.
Excellent.
But she really is an actress that deserves to at least be given a shot to be a lead in a major studio horror film. This film also has a great supporting cast as well. And remember, if your film has a butler obsessed with classical music, it's a great film. In my book.
Excellent.
100% agree with you.
Solid list all the way around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a good year for horror.
It really was. Especially indie horror.
Indie horror, yes.
Yes, yes. We saw some great, I mean, and I love that a lot more female directors are coming out of the woodwork, you know, claiming their right to independent horror and making some great films.
Yeah, I think I had two films on my list from female directors, come to think of it. Satanic Panic and actually maybe three. I think Braid is The Ranger, Braid, and Satanic Panic. So it's been a very good year for female directors.
I have four, but two of them are from, like, SheVenge. Izzy Lee has a short segment in that anthology film called For a Good Time Call. And she also did Rehome, Firstborn, From Within. And you had a couple on your list as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it makes me really happy. Can't wait to see what happens this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to newer stuff from all these folks.
Now, what's your most anticipated film of 2020?
All right.
Okay, so this was difficult to pare down. I have two on my list. But there are, from what we know of so far, there are some decent horror films coming out this year. And a lot of them are highly anticipated on my end. But two in particular are Gretel and Hansel. Now, I know we know the story of Hansel and Gretel. We've seen different adaptations of it before.
I like the Simpsons version.
The screen. But this one seems different. This one seems like it's going to be darker, which is exactly what a grim fairy tale is supposed to be.
That's where the word comes from.
Yeah, it's true. So I'm very eager to see exactly how they... Just exactly what they do with it. How they adapt, you know, the characters and how the witch comes into play and just exactly what happens. Like, the trailer looks crazy, and it looks so dark and so creepy.
And, you know, we mentioned this on our show this week, where it's got that new In Vogue thing, where, like, for a while it was the that weird blah sound that you heard in every single trailer once Inception did it. Now it's the weird, like, stringed instruments that kind of
like plucking the strings to create
plucking it, and then, like, that long, drawn-out thing where it... Like, Midsummer had it, like, The Witch had it, I believe.
It creates a sense of panic.
Yeah, it's panic and tension.
Yes.
But it's, like, that's, like, the new thing. Like, if you have, like, a period piece or something, you know, like a gothic horror, like, every single one of these movies has that now. So, if you watch the trailer, watch it, then watch the Midsummer thing, you'd be like, okay, I get what you're saying here.
And, yeah, so that's my number one. And my number two film that I'm really looking forward to is Antlers.
Yeah, the Wendigo movie.
That looks crazy. Yeah, I didn't know what a Wendigo was until I saw this trailer, and now I want to know more.
Well, he's the present tense of a Wendigo.
Thank you, Patsy. But yeah, I love creatures, and I love creature design, and I love learning about new creatures. So this is definitely, I had no idea what a Wendigo was. Now I know what it is, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it.
There was supposed to be, like in the novel there is, but there's supposed to be like a Wendigo haunting the Pet Cemetery woods. Like that's what, in Pet Cemetery, that's what kind of like blocks out the, that's what the logs are there for, to kind of block out the Wendigo. But I have three. Anthony, I'm sorry. I was trying to keep it to like one or two, but there were just three that I really want to see. First is The Turning, because it's finally like a creepy... I kind of compared it to The Good Son with Macaulay Culkin, but it's a creepy, scary role for Finn Wolfhard and Mackenzie Davis, who is just in the new Terminator film. That one looks really cool, really creepy. It's based on The Turn of the Screw by C.S. Lewis. The next one, I got very strong Mandy vibes from this film, and it stars Academy Award winner Nicolas Cage. The Color Out of Space.
I've heard of that. The H.P. Lovecraft story.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And apparently it's supposed to be the start of a trilogy of films.
Which I'm excited.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because I'm looking at it, I'm like, I'm getting strong Mandy vibes. Like, I haven't seen Mandy, but I've seen the trailer. And there's a lot of, like, pinks and purple, like, colors, you know, like, that are very, very prominent. And the same with this. And it turns out that, you know, not only is Academy Award winner Nicolas Cage in it, but it's also by, like, the same team that brought Mandy to the screen. And number three, my final film that I'm looking forward to, like, there are a lot, but the one I narrowed it down to, it's a film that is near and dear to my heart because I'm a huge Roald Dahl fan, and I had no idea that this film was even being made. But it is The Witches, comes out in October, and it's got Stanley Tucci and Octavia Spencer and Anne Hathaway. Anne Hathaway is actually taking over the Angelica Houston role, and I am really excited to see how she how she does with that, because she is kind of like a polar opposite of Angelica Houston, where Angelica Houston is this, you know, tall, statuesque, imposing, matriarchal, like, force of nature. And then Anne Hathaway is kind of like, oh, look at me, I'm goofy, but, you know, Julie Andrews is my grandma or something, and I'm the Queen of England. I don't know, I never watched The Princess Diaries, but I'm assuming...
First of all, Julie Andrews is either Genovia, not England.
Whatever, Julie Andrews is either her grandmother or her aunt.
It's her grandmother. Boy, I need to school you on some Princess Diaries,
and she's
okay?
All like, oh, I'm practically perfect in any way, and she's got this... fun chimney sweep, friend.
But here's the thing:
I might
she
be
can,
crossing over my Julie Andrews.
She can, yes, I think you're getting things a little mixed up. But Anne Hathaway can act. We know this.
Yes.
We have yet to see her in this type of role, so it'll be interesting.
No, I think it's going to be similar to her role as the White Queen in the
Oh, Alice
in Wonderland and, yeah,
the,
movie.
The
I think it'll be
Tim
similar
Burton
to
one.
That, but. With a more sinister twist.
Okay. Well, I can see that.
Now, for my most anticipated films 2020, I decided to avoid Saw or Halloween Kills and pick out a couple that aren't those films. The first one that you mentioned, Pat, was Color Out of Space. It's based on an H.P. Lovecraft story, but this is one of those films that you can take H.P. Lovecraft out of the equation. And I would still see this film because it has Nicolas Cage, Tommy Chong, with Richard Stanley, director of Hardware, directing this film. And judging by the film's trailer, this looks like it's going to be an acid trip.
Can I just say one thing? You need to address him by his full title, and
oh
that is
my God.
Academy Award winner Nicolas Cage.
He does this all the time. All the time.
If you follow me on social media,
leaving
you
know, Lost
oh, you've seen that new Nick Cage movie? And it's like, excuse me, Academy Award winner.
He's a
Nick
he's
Cage.
Mr. Asterisk. He's
for
like,
leaving Las Vegas, Nicolas
yes.
Cage.
Yeah.
So I always, because people are like, oh, he's such a ridiculous actor. Oh, he's so terrible. It's like, Academy Award winner, Nicolas Cage. I'm just busting your stones, buddy.
The next film I'm looking forward to is James Wan's Return to Horror, and it's Malignant, if I'm pronouncing it right.
Yep, that's right.
Nothing's known about this film, which is probably a good thing. The fact that it's James Wan directing is all you need to know about this film right now and to be excited for. I wish he was directing the Conjuring sequel instead, but this is fine because if you listen to my last episode, I'm kind of worried about the next Conjuring film.
Yeah, you didn't seem to have much confidence in that franchise.
Well, I did not like Michael Chavez's Curse of La Llorona, so that's probably why I don't have any confidence in this film, really.
Every time I see that movie, all I can think of is My Sharona, and like that's how it is. La 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 Llorona. I think when I see that.
And my last film that I'm looking forward to, it comes out late in the year. It's the latest film from Edgar Wright. If you don't know him, you probably never seen Shaun of the Dead. He's doing a new horror film called Last Night in Soho. And this is going to be more of a traditional horror film.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
So I can't wait for this film to come out. It's coming out in late September, so that is definitely one of my most anticipated films. And I believe it has the actress from The Witch starring in it, Anna Taylor-Joy.
Oh, yes. Yeah, she's good.
Yeah, she's real good.
I'm hoping this is a good film to bring Edgar Wright back to prominence, as he's pretty much been hit or miss lately.
Oh,
even though he did great with Baby Driver, The World's End wasn't that great.
Yeah, I didn't like that ending to the Cornetto trilogy. But this has got a good cast, like you said. Anya Taylor-Joy, Matt Smith, Diana Rigg from Game of Thrones. She was Olenna Tyrell. Terrence Stamp, who was General Zod in the original Superman. James and Oliver Phelps, who played the Weasley twins, are in this. Like, this is a good cast.
Yeah, and this may fly under the radar, too.
I hope not.
But with its September release date, at least it's going to be a couple weeks before Halloween Kills, so.
Yeah, there's a lot coming out in October this year.
Yes, and we may see a lot of films get taken down by Halloween Kills. That's a possibility.
I'm so nervous about that one.
I am too, because they're bringing everybody back now, and I'm hoping it's still good, because they filmed 2 and 3 back to back, so.
Probably a smart idea, though.
Yeah.
The guys aren't getting any younger.
Yeah.
I mean, Nick had 70.
That, and it's better to do a Europot than the original plan. The rumored plan, where they were thinking about releasing it a couple months in between, which wouldn't be good.
No.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of rushing it.
Yeah. I'm a little bit apprehensive about this Saw film that's coming out, too. Don't really know much about it, because there's not much about it out there right now. We just know that it's happening. It's a thing that's happening.
And I'll be honest, I hadn't even heard of Malignant. Like, thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Yeah.
I was unaware that James Wan was doing anything.
Yeah, that's been flying under the radar, as that seems to be very under wraps.
Probably for good reason.
Yes.
At least hope so.
Hope so.
It's either really good or really awful.
Hopefully it's really good.
I am with you on that.
Because he's had a couple of really good films lately, so I'm hoping it's really good.
Yeah, I'm with you. He even brought a nice horror element to Aquaman, I think.
Yeah, I was surprised that his version of Aquaman was very good. Considering DC's track record, at least they're making the turn, I think.
Well, they did just pick up J.J. Abrams, so.
Oh, okay, that could be good or bad.
I think it's going to be good.
It depends. Wasn't a fan of his last film, which I won't get into because.
That's fair.
You know, everyone's entitled to their own opinion.
Because it's a horror podcast, not a Star Wars podcast.
That's true, but you know, we'll have to have you on and talk some more horror stuff on both of these shows.
Well, where can they find both Throwdown Thursday and Shock's Bite podcasts on the social media?
The best place to find us is if you go to ThrowdownThursdayPodcast.com. It's got all the links to all of our social media. It's got the articles that I write. It's got some interviews with some Women in Horror from October. It's got, you know, my social media stuff, Ash's social media stuff. It's got the most recent episode of Throwdown Thursday and the most recent episode of Shark Bite streaming. So you can just kind of put it on in the background while you're doing stuff, you know, either at home or at work. So that's probably the easiest place, because it's one centralized location and you can get everything from there. But you can also find us on Facebook. We have groups you can join.
Yeah, you just search Throwdown Thursday Podcast.
Yeah, we're always looking for, you know, suggestions for characters to cover, you know, and on Shark Bites, I do everything. It's kind of like a catch-all. It's like some of the stuff we can't cover on Throwdown Thursday. You know, so we have some interviews. We have, you know, what was it, like 7 weeks of Star Wars podcasts?
It was a lot.
I mean, not enough. I was on one of them.
Yeah, you were. The one you were on with me was like 3.5 hours long.
No, I was on the prediction show.
Oh, yeah, you were on the prediction show. Okay, yeah, so that one was like
an hour. Trust me, now it would have been going on and on and on how bad this film was.
But yeah, there was a lot. But yeah, we do a ton of stuff, so definitely check us out there.
Well, I want to thank you, Ashes and Patsy, for coming on to my podcast. Have a good day.
Well, thank you so much for having us. This was fun.
This was fun. We have to do it again sometime.
Absolutely, and yeah. We will definitely have you as a guest on our show, Throwdown Thursday, soon.
Well, thank you very much, and have a good day.
All right, thanks, buddy.
For the latest news and information on Anthony T's Horror Show, you can check out Anthony T's Horror Show on social media platforms, at Anthony T's Horror Show on Facebook, Instagram, and the Slasher app, at Anthony T's Horror on Twitter. Anthony T's Horror Show can be found on YouTube as well, at youtube.com/AnthonyTherber. Find Doc Discussions on the web at www.docdiscussions.com. And you can find Anthony T's Horror Show on the web at anthonytshorrorshow.blogspot.com. Welcome back. Since this episode has gone way too long, I'm also not going to go into what I've been watching lately. But I will make it up next episode, as I'll probably talk about a couple films to make up for the lack of segment this episode. On the YouTube channel, I'll be having a film review up soon, more like a video review up soon, of Abnormal Attraction, as it's a film done by a couple of the people behind Terrifier. If you listen to the Rock and Shock shows from this past year, I talked to two of the filmmakers of Abnormal Attraction, as we briefly talk about that film, besides Terrifier. So keep an eye on the YouTube channel for that. And also, next episode, I will be interviewing director Aaron Mento, director of Ugly Sweater Party. Definitely a film you should check out. It's available on Amazon Prime. With that, I want to thank you for listening to this episode. Have a good day and support indie horror.